Let me tell you of Tucker County, the place where I was born, in the wilds of West Virginia, by nature so grandly adorned. In a beautiful emerald valley, flanked high by mountains tall, McGowan, Green, and Backbone, by the settlers they were called. And down in this winding valley, a river runs brisk and clean, but why they named it Dry Fork is the wonder of any man's dream. For many old folk here have told me, not once can memory recall of Dry Fork being empty and flowing not at all. Now along both sides of the river, rich bottom land did lay for the settlers and the farmers when by chance they passed this way. So they claimed the lush green meadows, built their homes and then small towns, and for many years so peaceful there, the river kept its bounds. And we all lived there by the riverside with never a worry or care, till a flood came down on a November eve and washed away all we held dear.
Of course, we realized we was trapped, the power was out, we only had one little light, you know, and I sat there by this window and I could see houses, cars, people that I knew that lived there. I watched their homes wash away. I watched their automobiles wash away. And then I knew then that this is it. You know, it's over. Life's over for me. You know, and I accepted the fact that I was going to die that night in that house.
They say that the end of the world is coming, but it'll go by fire. And Mom just kept feeling to see if we were still there, because she was afraid it was the end of the world.
It was like a blast, like a bomb had hit the house, and that was when the basement wall caved in.
Yeah. I never seen nothing like this, because the marks down there on the trees where them old fellows showed me, this was way higher than the 1888 flood.
Not many people in their lifetime have seen anything like this. The whole town was underwater. It's just something like, the world's coming to an end.
Everybody that was a victim or involved in this flood, in my opinion, should sit down and talk about it.
The night of the flood, I heard dispatch some of the EMT people out evacuating people. So knowing what a hassle was in and everything, I called my captain. And I told him it sounded like we was getting some high water here, and it sounded to me like it's going to be necessary to hit the road and see what could be done and everything like this. And all I could get him to tell me, well, if they need you, work. If they call on you, work. So after calling him then, I sat around here probably another 40, 45 minutes, listened to the scanner, and Miss Barb called me, one of her magistrates, and she wanted to know if I would try to go down and go in her drugstore and turn the computer off. She had a brand new computer, and they thought the water was going to get up that high, and so I advised her, yeah, I'd go do it. By the time I got there, there's 3 feet of water up on the drugstore already. That's how fast it came up. And this time, they got the call, and the word came that a fire truck had got washed away down the Holly Meadows, and they brought the farming in, and there's a bunch more farming on the other side of the river that they didn't know nothing, you know, they had no contact with, and they couldn't get back.
We had a portable radio, and we was in a private vehicle, and we heard a farmer at Hendricks calling for help, that the water was really getting bad, and they needed some help. So Jim Brosser and I, one of the other farmen, went into where the old Hick Fairgrounds is now. And the water was hitting me right about the knees. And, you know, I didn't think much of it because I never dreamed that the water would come up like it did. Well, somehow we found out that Mr. and Mrs. Russell Hebb was in their home, you know, and we was going to go try to help them get out. And it was about, I don't know, about 20 after 6, quarter after. And we went in the house, and when we come back out, the water was up to about my chest. And we knew that if we didn't get out of there then, we wasn't going to get out. Well, two other farmmen, Brian King and a Parsons boy, threw us a rope, and we tied it off to the house. And they tied it off to where they was. And we started across in another building, come down and hit our rope and got all tangled up. And we, you know, just took our rope, and we couldn't get out. So then I started getting concerned, you know. I didn't know how high the water would be coming up or anything, but I got on the phone, and I called the dispatcher over here, and I told her, I said, hey, you know, the water's bad up here. I said, there's 8 people in this house. If you don't get us some help up here, we're going to die. And that was the exact words I told her. She said, okay, we'll see what we can do. So I tried calling back about 15 minutes later when the water started running through the house. It was probably about 6 inches deep on the floor coming across. And I knew that the phones would be going out, you know, before long, so I got back on the phone again. I couldn't get the dispatch, but I got my wife on the phone. And I said, Denise, I said, I'm up here, I'm trapped in a house. I said, we're all okay now, but you go upstairs and tell the dispatcher that they got to get us out of here or we're going to die.
My father-in-law was a state policeman, so I wanted to call the mercy squad and see if they'd pass me into him and maybe get a boat in to us. So I tried calling the mercy squad, and they wouldn't let me talk to him. Said that it was busy over there. And I asked them if they'd get a boat in to us, tell the fire department to get a boat in to us because there wasn't no way we could get out. And the water was coming in the house then. It was just barely coming, skim layer coming over the floor. And so we waited there a while on them, well, about as long as we could, and the water come up in the living room, and it was coming up pretty close to the phone. I thought, well, if I'm going to make another call, better try it, see if the phone still be working. I picked it up, and it was still working. So I made another call, and I told them that there wasn't no chance of even getting a boat into us then because there was too much debris and stuff coming down the river. It was buildings and everything else, trees and stuff coming down through there. So I asked them if they'd send a helicopter in to us to get us out because there was 8 of us in the house. And they said that they couldn't get a hold of it. They couldn't pass me through my father-in-law or nothing because they was all busy and the phone lines and everything was tore up. She said she'd call me back. I told her, I said, well, you'll not call me back on the phone. I said, it's just a wonder it's working now. And it went dead on us then. So I knew then that we had to get upstairs, get out of the water. So I took and helped my aunt upstairs and then told the rest of them to come upstairs.
So we went upstairs in the house, and it was probably about, I don't know, 6:45, maybe, when we had to go upstairs in the house. And we was all sitting in one little room trying to figure out what we was going to do. We knew that people knew we was in there, but they just couldn't get into us. So then it got dark on us. And I really started getting concerned. And we all sat in one little room in the house. And of course, we realized we was trapped and the power was out. We only had one little light. You know, and I sat there by this window and I could see houses, cars, people that I knew that lived there. I watched their homes wash away. I watched their automobiles wash away. And then I knew then that this is it. You know, it's over. Life's over for me, you know. And I accepted the fact that I was going to die that night in that house, but it didn't scare me. All I could think of was my family, you know, my two little boys and my wife. That's all I could think of.
And I seen, you know, the water, there wasn't no chance for us getting out. So I just asked them all if they'd come into one room, we'd have a word of prayer. So we all come into one room, and I asked them to get in a circle, and we grabbed hands, and I prayed for them, prayed for all of us, and wasn't no sooner I said amen, boy, heard kahoom, and underneath us, the old house started shaking. Hear a building or something come through the side of the house, right where underneath where we're standing.
And about that time, somebody said, "Look out!" And I don't know who it was, but another building come down, slammed into the house that we was in, and tore the back wall off of it. And of course, all you could hear was glass. The water rushing through the house. And for about 4.5 hours, the house just sat there and moved back and forth, back and forth, and rocked off the foundation, and we could just hear trees slamming into the house, you know. And and everything. And, you know, like I said, I knew he was dead, and it was just a matter of when it was going to happen. And the elderly lady that was with us, God bless her, she was 77 years old. We got her to sleep. We made her as comfortable as we could. And she went to sleep, and as the night went on, the only way we could tell was the water was rising or going down was from the stair steps. And there was 15 steps in the house, and the water was on the 13th step when it started going down.
It was way up, man. I could reach out the window, and the water would hit your hands from reaching out the window, the upstairs window. So I figured the river's just going to take us down. So I took and went, and I knew, you know, that if them fellas wasn't right with the Lord, you know, and they'd be killed that night, I just felt the Lord would hold me responsible for it, you know. So I went and I went and took the fellas off by themselves one-on-one and asked them if they'd been saved. And Hank told me he never, and he kind of broke down. He told me he'd like to be.
Danny Hibb, he asked me, he said, you prayed about it? And I said, no, we haven't, Danny. And he said, well, let's pray about it.
The house was staying pretty good. You could hear stuff smashing into it and roaring. Just sounded like a train coming through it, just a steady roar. And the house started shaking really bad then. The windows started rattling and everything. And I figured that was the time the house was going to go then. And so I just started praying so hard and everything. And I just started getting scriptures back. It was in the Bible about faith. And I just tried to block everything from mind and just have faith in the Lord. And the old house quit shaking. It wasn't no sooner than I quit praying, the windows stopped shaking. The water kept raising, but the house stopped shaking.
And I know that's the only thing that held that house there was us praying in the Lord's hand there with it. You know, I don't know what was on that house that night because there was only four homes left there and we was in one of them.
The water receded then and it kind of quit raining and then the water started going down. And the next morning, well, it was getting daylight then and the water, it felt like somebody pulled the plug on a bathtub or something. The water went out so fast. And it went down and then they brought a canoe in and got us out with the canoe then.
When they got us out the next morning, you know, all I could think about was my wife and kids. Where's my wife and kids, you know? I was cold, I was wet, hungry. So when they got us out, I remember going to the tracks and there was people handing me coffee and blankets. And I just had to get to my family. But not one time has anybody come up to me or any of these seven other gentlemen that was in the house and said, hey, you want to talk about it? Not one time. You know, and I know that there's people out there that also had a worse night probably than I did. And I would love to know who they are so I could go talk to them. Everybody that was a victim or involved in this flood, in my opinion, should sit down and talk about it.
At night when we went to bed, Mom said it sounded like the water was at her back, was out the back door. Because it was roaring so loud. Me and my mom and Tammy slept in her mom's bed, and Mom kept reaching up to see if me and Tammy were still there because they say that the end of the world is coming, but it'll go by fire. And Mom just kept feeling to see if we were still there because she was afraid it was the end of the world. Whenever I get scared from my dreams, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I run in and tell Mom, and she comes in and goes to bed with me and tell him I'll fall asleep and calm down.
Tell me about the dream. What happened?
Well, we was at sleep and I heard these thunder. It was raining and it was dark and at night, and I was just slaving drinks and sitting and laying down in bed asleep, and then the waters came up and washed our house out, and it broke our house in two, and I went down one way and Mom and Dad went the other. And then I woke up, and then I screamed for Mom. She asked me what happened, and I told her what happened.
Uh-huh. And you felt better?
Mm-hmm.
I was up Shaver's work that day and been up there working on my first cousin's A-frame, and anyway, it rained us out, and so we went to the house. We just got in and was getting dry and was going to sit around and eat some supper there and watch some TV, and some people come up and was telling me that they had to push water at Porterwood in a four-wheel drive truck, so they pushed water up around the headlights coming through Porterwood, and we just laughed at him because we thought, I was telling him, oh, you're crazy. He's telling me, no, I'm serious. So I told him, well, if it's that high out there, you know, take me to town. Anyway, we come to town, got to town about 8:30, and in front of Croston's down here, the headlights of the truck went clear underwater at Croston's. We stopped and backed out of it, and then the headlights come back on, you know, where they was out of the water. And we went back up the street. Anyway, we ended up going down to my place for my dog. And by the time I got down there, my trailer was just all but underwater. The only thing I could see was the top of the rack, about 3 inches of the top of the rack out of the car, out of the water whenever we got there. So we decided we'd go up and see if we couldn't get a boat from the fire department, and they had all theirs was out. So I knew a couple of friends of mine that had a canoe, but we couldn't locate them because they was out busy helping other people too. And by the time we got back down to my place, the car was clear underwater and the camper was just all but underwater. And the dog was still swimming around on his chain, as high as the chain would let him go up, you know. He just got tired, and after a while, you know, he couldn't handle, you know, keep up the stroke there with the water current was real bad. And my friends, there was a few of them there, and they didn't want me going out in there after him because they were afraid that I would end up dead along with him. So we just had to sit and watch him die. And that's when we come back up to back up to the Moose Hill area. We watched that furniture store right there by the red light on the right. He had that big truck set around back there all the time, where they hauled furniture and stuff in. Well, we watched it float up and down through the back street there. And it float from up there, float 2 blocks, float from up the block, clear down below the half-price store, and then it float back up the street and just look like a pinball machine. It'd go over there and hit something, and then the water would take it back across the street and it'd hit something. It was on its side. And the next morning when the water went down, it was in the MP lot sitting on its wheels.
About this time, someone came up, and there was a bunch of people at St. George trapped in a house. Elderly people in a rest home down there, trapped in the house. And that Mr. Goss was going down in his boat and try to get them out. So we proceeded to go down and see if we could be of help down there.
It was way after dark when a couple of fellows walked up the road towards my son's house, and they said, "Do you have that boat down there parked down the next street?" And I said, "Yeah." The fellow said, "There's some old people trapped in the house of St. George." Said, "Would you go help get them out?" "Yeah, boat." And I said, "Sure, we'll try." Well, the fellow said, "I'll go with you." He said, "I'll help you." So, and one time I got down there, all the emergency cars were sitting there, and some of the fellows got in clear up the hole way above their waist in the water there and pushed the boat out. The fellow that came after me, I gave him a life jacket put on. I told him when we went to leave, I said, "Now, see, I didn't notice whether any trees was growing in that area or not." I said, "Now, if we hit something solid with this prop," I said, "I don't know any way of getting out of here." And He was out swimming, the hardest thing to swim to get out. And I made one pass towards the house there, and the water coming around the house. And when I got hit that swift water, it killed me, and I had to come back around, and next time, and I gunned the boat, and I got across there, and I got on the lee side of the house where it was kind of calm in there. And I got the boat right up against the side of the house, up to the second store window, and I held the boat in as a vent pipe, going right up to the roof there, and I held on to it, and the other fellow had a hammer, and he broke out the storm window. When we get him to the window, then I just pull him right back on the boat and cover him up with what we had. They were wet and scared. So we took four of them at the time, and I think a dog was in there. We took it in with that trip. But they told me before I went in there, said the lady back in the rooms back in there has a heart condition. And when in this time, I said I need another man because we're going to have to get a woman carried out of there. And one fellow said, I'll go with you. And I said, can you swim? And he said, no, I can't. I said, well, you better not go then. Another fellow stepped up and he said, well, I can swim. He said, I'll go. So I gave him one of those life cushions. I had two life jackets and two life cushions in there, and I gave him one. I said, you hang on that if anything happened. So we went back to the house, and when I got her out of the boat, and I pulled her back and put her on the seat beside where I sit, and I gave her my life jacket, and they had thrown a blanket out of the house here, and I put it around her. She said that she was having a problem breathing. And I told the fellow, I said, I'm going to take her on in here. So I run her on in, and we put her fully back in the ambulance. And then when we go back next time, well, I could see the water raising a little bit more on the, it was clear up above the window then, upstairs. The beds were floating upstairs. And so when we go back then, I said, we'll just take everybody that's in there. And the two boys with me and the people, we had seven in the boat the last time. I got them all. I was afraid that the water would break through on the upper side of the house. And if it did with those windows all closed, it would have raised up real quick. It could have drowned them. That's why I was scared of them. I thought maybe the house might start breaking up, but water's coming around pretty swift. But the house still standing there. It's a good house.
Down the road, there wasn't any water on the road, and all of our neighbors had left, so Dad thought maybe he should go out and look, and he went and looked on the road that I just came down 5 minutes before, and there was water up to his ankles. So then I turned the lights on out back, and the water was almost up to the back door, and Mom had checked it at 6:30, and it wasn't up at all, and that was something about 8 o'clock. And then we left, and by the time we got to the road where it was to his ankles, it was too much, it was too high for the Jeep to go through. So it flipped it over on its side, and it washed it over across the street in the field and just sat there. And we sat out on the side of it and yelled, and some of the neighbors that were higher up were still there, and she went and called the fire department.
We got a call, said we had a Jeep overturned in Holly Meadows. All we had was the big fire trucks. So we took off. We thought there was only three of us. We all three, the Larry Price and the Simmons boy and me, got in front and left. And we didn't know there was anybody on the back till we got down there. And we had three boys on the back when we got down there. And there was two McWilliams boys down there, you know. I guess, I don't know, it must have been 50 yards out in through there. The Jeep was overturned, and the people were sitting up on it on its side, waving their arms for us, you know. So we start looking in the truck for ropes, and they took all the ropes out and put them in the rescue truck when they went to Hendricks and Hamilton to try and get the people out from up in there. So all we had was one little old, I guess the thing might have been 25 feet, rope. We tied a brass fitting on it, tried to throw it out to the people out there, but it wouldn't reach. And when we threw it out there, it came out of our hands, my hands actually. I was the one holding the end of it, and we lost the ropes and everything. I started around the truck looking in the compartments, hopefully coming up with another rope or something. And next thing we know, you know, all of a sudden, something's behind me shoving me. And I turn around, there's nobody there other than just water pinned me against the truck. And Larry Price had got in it and tried to back it up. You know, we felt we was in too far then. And boy, all of a sudden, you know, he tried backing it up and no go. And just all of a sudden the front starts floating, turning sideways. Evidently somewhere on up the upper end of the fields, the fences and the debris and stuff holding the water back, and it broke over. And it just let a kind of like a wall of water come down through, evidently, and just shoved a fire truck right out into the center of the daggone river there. We got out in there, and we were stuck right there, and there all of a sudden, it just, you know, we're watching Bob and his wife and daughter over there, and it just lifted up the Jeep. Just lifted it up like that, and there they go, floating down the river.
So right when they got up to us, the Jeep lifted up and started moving, and it flipped again, and we all fell off. And Mom and Dad got pushed towards the land. They got up to it, and the first time I came up, I could hear them yelling, but I couldn't yell back because I couldn't breathe. But when I went under three or four times, and I got to a briar bush, and I got a hold of it, and it still kept pulling me under. So I pushed my head up into the bush to try to get it stuck in it so that it would stay above water. But then the tree got washed out. So I don't know how. Somehow I got a hold of a board. It was long and skinny. And I kept a hold of it, and I got to a barbed wire fence, and I could stand. And the water wasn't swift there. And I could see lights up on a hill. And so I put the board over top of the fence and climbed over the fence. And I was going to try to get to the house or wherever the lights were. And the water picked up again. And it knocked me down into the fence, and I got caught in it. So I held onto the fence post because the water was hitting me from the back. And I was stuck there. And then the porch, it was a whole wooden deck. And it came, and it hit me in the back. And I crawled up on it and laid on it until it floated into the tree. And I climbed up in the tree, and then the porch floated away. So I just sat there and waited.
We watched until, you know, it was out of sight with the lights we had, because it was dark then. And everybody said, oh, God, what's next? You know, and here we're on the phone screaming, or the radio screaming for help, you know, to get us out. So then we were sitting there really feeling... I don't know how we were feeling. We were scared, definitely scared. Three of us were still in the front, and the three firemen and the two McWims brothers were on the back of the truck at that time. And it was swift, and we knew there wasn't any way, you know, we was going to walk out of it. And, you know, the water just kept coming up and coming up and coming up, and we could see probably 30 yards over, you know, a little knoll there, a little thing where there was land. And the Williams boys decided to try and go off with 200 feet of fire hose and thought maybe they could walk over to the land and secure that and for us to come off. So they tried, and, you know, I got out in the river, and the next thing we know, you know, it's washing them down, and we lose sight of them. And everybody said, thank God, there's two more going. We were shook. We were extremely scared. Me and the Simmons boy are both scared of water to start with, can't swim. the McWilliams boys, they went down, and finally they came up on, we spotted them where they go up on the knoll over there where it was high. And they motioned for us to stay, that the water was swift, there's all kind of debris in it. So we thought, well, you know, great. You know, they'll go get some help and get it down here right away. So we probably waited another half hour. We decided to get out and climb up on the back of the fire truck. Well, we got up there and sat and waited, and finally, the truck started doing this back and forth and back and forth, you know, we thought there wasn't no way of riding that thing out. If the water come, you know, or kept coming up, it was going to tilt it over, and somebody's going to end up underneath of it, and that's it. So we were rocking, and we knew then that we didn't have any choice. You know, we either try on our own to get out of it or forget it. So we went in a group, all six of us, down the 200 feet of hose. Well, we took all our bunker gear off. You know, all we had on was pants, shirt, and a pair of socks. And the field was tough on the feet. It felt like corn stalks down there. You were stepping on them, would have been cut off. Guess when we got to the end of the hose, you know, we didn't have to just let go. Just rolling around under the water, coming up gasping for air, you know, when you could. Because, you know, it was so swift you couldn't swim in it. Larry went first, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, I heard him, and the others said they heard him, said, stand up. So I stood up, couldn't breathe. I thought I was going to die right there. I seen a little old sapling, could have been about 10 yards away from me. So I made my way over to that thing, grabbed hold of it, and then I heard somebody saying, Craig, help me. So I looked around, there was Fred Trader. And he was standing there, he said, I can't go. So I got a hold of his hand, pulled him over to me. I told him, well, let's just stand here, you know, until we can breathe. I said, I can't breathe. So we stood there. Couldn't have been maybe a minute or so. And the other guys all come up, and we seen them all standing there. They started out, and I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. I said, back up, boys. I said, we're going out here together. I said, me and Fred can't make it. So we went probably another 10 yards to another little sapling, got a hold of that, and that's where the rest of them were. And we got a hold and held hands and walked over to where we got up on that little knoll to where we could get out of it. So just by the grace of the good Lord, we made it out of there.
I'd heard that Bob Moore had got washed away at Holly Meadows. And so as I started uphill, I met him coming. So I stopped talking to him, and I said, Bob, I'm glad to see you, because I'd heard you got it washed away. And he said, no, my daughter Amy. And I said, Amy? He said, yeah, you know Amy, worked down at the News and Knob. I said, yeah. But I didn't know she was his daughter. I knew she was a Moore, but I didn't know whose daughter it was. And so about that time, his wife started screaming, where's the farming at? I said, well, lady, last count I had, it was all in the hospital. It was down there, the fire truck upset, and they're all in the hospital down here. And she said, well, who's going to look for my daughter? I said, lady, till now I didn't know you had a daughter lost. I said, now just settle down and tell me what happened and so on and so forth, and maybe we can get some help down there. Of course, at that point, who do you get?
So I went up to the people's house I was staying with that night up on Spruce Street. We'd been in the water there all evening. We just got in and got dried off, got dry clothes on, and a friend of ours, Steve Sturms, he came in and asked us if we would come in. David asked us if we would go and help him look for Amy Moore. And her dad and Alan Roberts was out in the blazer waiting on Steve. Okay, we told him, yeah, you know, we'd been out in it all night, but yeah, we'll go back out with you. So we went back down, and we went down Holly Meadows and looked for, well, we looked for about six, seven hours there.
Truthfully, down deep, I didn't feel that there's any chance we'd ever see the girl alive again. With the way the water is rolling down through there, and the fact that she couldn't swim, I thought it would be impossible to ever see her alive. So we went ahead, and we took them down there, went down, and let them have what lights we had, and so on and so forth.
And about 4:30 in the morning, 4:15, 4:30, I seen this trailer. Well, couldn't tell what it was. It was just something white, and it was clear across the water. My light was just about dead from using it all evening. And so Amy's dad there, he had a real good light. The light was up real bright, and I was asking him to shine the light over there on this white thing. It looked like a house. So we decided we was going to go home and then come back in a couple hours and look for daylight. And I was telling him, I said, well, we done been out here all night, so it ain't much use to go home. We just get home, and I know, I told him, I said, if I know me, if I go home, I'm going to go to bed. I'm going to be there for a while. So I said, well, let's just look a little bit longer, see if we can't see something or somebody.
And then after a while, so three flashlights, and I wasn't going to yell at them because I didn't think they'd be able to hear because the water was so loud. And they moved down a little farther, so I yelled at them, and then all the lights popped up because they were looking in the water.
Anyway, she yelled, "Hey!" You know, you could tell it was coming across from the water over that wave. So we thought she was in the trailer, or the house. And anyway, we yelled at her and was asking her who. You know, we couldn't tell whether it was a woman or a man. We was asking them who they was or how many are they over there. And she yelled, "Hey!" at us three times. That was it. She wouldn't talk to us no more.
So we started scurrying again for our boat. So we walked up the street there, and there sits Mr. Goss sitting there in his van asleep with a big boat hooked on the back of his vehicle. He'd done been there and taken them people out of this house. So at this time, well, we tried to get him roused up a little bit there and see if he could take his boat in there and try to get these people out.
And someone flashed the light and went in, and it was Bloom, the game warden. A couple of fellows with him, and he said, there's some people on a rooftop down in Holly Meadows, and they can hear them hollering, and asked me if I could take the boat down and try to get them. He said they didn't have any chance of getting any boats till, you know, later on that day, and this is in the middle of the night. Well, I said, if we get the boat in, we'll try to get them.
Pretty soon, two ambulances came and a bunch of other cars. They were shining lights to see if they could see me. But Dad said that they couldn't see me. They could see the outline of the trees and the outline of the trailer that was in the tree beside me.
So we got down about halfway down the lane in Holland Bed as far as we could get, and we had to manhandle the boat and got it in there. And Humphrey Boy lives down low town there. He says, "I'm going to go with you." He said, "I'm going to help you." And I said, "Well," I said, "I'll need help."
So they was debating on what to do there and who to go and this and that and the other thing. Well, I've been having back trouble, and I hated to crawl in that boat and not be a whole lot of help after I got there. So we got a fella here we call Shitty Boots Humphrey. That's all I've ever known him of. He's worthless, but Shitty Boots said, "I'll go."
Most of the emergency people there was tired, and from all the fighting and people they'd been saving all evening there anyway. That and the water being so high and bad out there that they was, you know, scared to go out in the boat. So Don, he's probably 70-some years old. I told him if he, you know, it was his boat, if he wasn't scared to take it and go out there, I wasn't scared to go with him. We'd go out and see who's over there, see if we could save him or whatever. Me and him started to cross, and the only thing we had was Forrest Bloom's flashlight. We started to cross, and David and Sturms was yelling at us. I couldn't hear what they were saying for the water roaring and the motor roaring, so I told him to shut the boat off, so he did. And they was to tell us that the telephone lines or the power lines had got up around the motor on the boat, And we was dragging the poles down the river. We used to taking them right down the river. The ones that washed out or been knocked out, we was pouring them down the river. We didn't, the boat couldn't even tell it in the water. But as soon as he shut the boat off, the boat went back up the river about four or five boat lengths. And then when it stopped, the cables fell off the boat. And by that time, we was free-flowing again. Took him a little bit to get the boat started. They didn't want to start right back up. In the meantime, we was drifting down the river. The water was probably running 55 or 60 miles an hour on the water. I thought we was going to hit the trees broadside. I thought we was going to hit it about 55 or 60 miles an hour broadside when he got the boat started. We got it in gear, and it just drove right across.
And I hear a hollering, hear the person hollering. I flashed the light over, and she's in a tree. Right where the swiftest water come, there's a piece of a house on in the trees there, and she was over from it.
I didn't even think about it being a motorboat because I could see a light coming to me, and I figured it must be a boat. And all I could think of was a rowboat. I couldn't think of a motorboat, and I thought, I'm not going to get in that boat for nothing.
And I knew if I'd run the motor right down into the tree, I would probably hit something at a prop, and then we'd just have to all stay there. So there's a tree right up from it, and we had this rope at the pond that the emergency squad had. And I told the Humphrey boy, I said, I'm going to get up next to that tree there up above, and I said, you snatch this rope around the tree.
We didn't, you know, I'd never been out on the water, never tried to rescue anybody. I didn't know what the heck we was even doing out there. So I pulled about 20, 25 feet of the rope off the front of the boat out, made a big loop. And then when we come up beside the tree, I threw my arm around it and tried to reach around and grab the rope on this side. Well, when I got the rope, pulled it back, about that time the current shifted the boat around and it drug me almost out of the boat. The only thing caught on me was the heel of my shoe. Was the only thing I had caught in the boat. I was out of the boat. I was hanging on the tree. And he had to start the boat up again and pull the boat back up to where I could get my feet back down in the boat. And then there wasn't no place for me to tie the rope off to on the boat. There was no hooks or nothing on it. So I had to hold it. I had a yellow raincoat on. And like I said, I had that loop there. So I just threw the loop, pulled the loop down over my arm. See that scar? That's where I had to, if I hadn't had the raincoat on, it would have been worse. But I had to hold the rope under here and hold my arm up. And then just let the rope, let it lead out, let it go across my arm to let the boat back in far enough to where it would go into the forks of the tree where she was at.
Boy Strong, he grabbed that tree. The boat was in that swift water, and I thought he was going to get away from it. He hugged that tree, and he held her on there. And he got the rope around it, and he let it off. And you know that boat went right down there, right under her feet where she's in the tree.
I really didn't want to get in the boat near the water. I'd rather stay at the tree because the water was going down. I just thought I was going to have to sit there until the water went down and then walk out. But I really didn't want to get in that boat.
I had a time getting her to let go, but I got her hands loose, and I got her down so her foot, she'd stand on top of the motor, get her foot down top of the motor, and then I got her on the boat.
So they had trouble getting it backed up close enough where I could get on it. And I put my foot on the motor, and it slid off, and I told him no. I said, if you can't get it back any farther, then I can't get in. And they got it to come back a little farther, and I got in.
Well, he got her into the boat there, you know, safe. And I asked him if the boat would start, and he said, yeah, it'd start. I said, well, start it, make sure here before I turn loose of the rope. And so I turned loose of the rope and told him to go, and we come back to the shoreline and got her out of the water. And well, I got out of the boat into the water there and got her out. And then I didn't realize, you know, I was so hyper, I guess, for being out there fighting all that water and everything. So I picked her up and got her in my arms. I didn't realize I was that tired. And my arms started shaking, so I had to hand her off to another guy that was just come up there.
She had a boot to take his coat off and wrapped around that little girl. Well, I never thought I'd ever see the day it had ever happened, but I took my coat off and gave it to Shitty Boots. And I took it off and was proud to give it to the old boy now this day, because he came up through her carrying her on his back.
When I got out of the water, there was a lot of people out there, and they passed me from one to the other and wrapped their coats and stuff around me. And then when I got to the hospital, they just put me in bed and put the hot water bottles around me. But I was cold. Yeah, I didn't stop. My teeth didn't stop chattering until I'd been in the hospital, I think, for an hour. I wasn't really that scared, I think, because there wasn't nothing I could do, you know. I couldn't have went anywhere else, and I couldn't have got out of it. But I thought a little bit about Mom and Dad, because I didn't know what happened to them, but then I just decided to quit thinking about it and just, you know, wait until it got daylight.
We got lucky and got her out and got the boot out of her without getting, you know, anybody else hurt or anything. But I guess some people weren't as fortunate that night.
I got off the bus and I went down there the hill, and the water was up higher than it ever been when we lived down there. And we was going to buy the house. And Mom said, well, we ain't go buy this place if it floods. So I went in the house and the water was up around the dogs, and we moved the dogs up above the building. And we was in there, and my dad went to check on the water, and he said it was up around our clothesline. He come back for a while, and then went back and said there was at least two more steps and it'd be up around our house. He got the dogs and came back down and told us to come on and get in the truck. And we got in the truck and it washed us off the road two times. We was in the nursery bottom. And the next, they took me up to my papa's and we stayed there that night. And my mom and my cousin's mom were stuck in Parsons. And their dads came up and said that water was up around our house. Well, I was scared. My cousins were too. My one cousin, after we got up, my papa's, was crying, saying she didn't care whether it washed her pony away or not. She just wanted her kitten. I wanted my kitten, too. I was scared. When my papa went down the house that night, he watched it. He went down and saw something floating off the porch. And he went back down and the house had already fell down. The next day we went down to try to find some stuff. Our refrigerator had fell out the window and was laying on the ground. And the people that lived next door said my kitten didn't drown. It ran up over the hill. Still can't find it.
This is when we was leaving the night of the flood. The water was up to my knees when I went out. I got out there and I started floating. My dad grabbed hold of my shirt and pulled me to the car. He was wading water to his waist when he went to turn off the lights. He came out and we left. He went to Burl Cars, Jenny and Cars. He stayed there and I didn't sleep much that night. I don't know how my brother slept, but I didn't. Just sitting there on the couch, laying on my dad, just talking and thinking about what's going on. And we left our cat there, and he's still alive. And he died in February. When my dad went back in, he was had mud, and he had to go in the window because the sand just held the door shut. Then he got in, and he saw that our toy box was turned upside down. And part of the furniture, we had a rocking chair, it moved into the next room. There's a bunch of stuff that moved into the pantry. He went in and had a good couch upside down and the stereo speakers. One of them came down face and the other one came down the back. and our stereo was covered. It made me really mad. I was mad at it because I took my bike and I want my bike back. I told Mom, was God trying to prove he's the ruler of the earth again? Because I got mad and I didn't like it.
It rained for, I don't know, 2 or 3 days, really. I don't know exactly how long it had rained. And Trooper Cordial come by the office for some reason. I don't know if it just stopped to say hello. And we talked, and about 4 o'clock, I said, let's go look at the rivers. Let's go check the streams. Went to St. George and looked at the river down there, and, it, you know, at 4 or 4:30, there was nothing really out of here, you know. So we come on up by Holly Meadows and Hamilton Hendricks and come back on into Parsons. And then we got a call that a school bus was having problems up Pheasants. Water coming out over a culvert or something, you know, and he was afraid to cross the bridge or the culvert with the bus with all the kids on. So we went up to assist them, and they walked the kids on across, and the kids got home safely, and the bus come on out. We come back to town, and by that time, the water was coming up over the Slough Bridge.
And at about 6 or 6:30, we decided we'd better start trying to evacuate some people that lived right across the, right along the river there. We're telling some of the people that, you know, they better be getting out. And they were worried about getting their oriental carpets up off the floor and getting all their things up out of the water. And, you know, there's just no way we could do that. We'd been down on that one street all night. So we warned a few people. And then we got with the fireman, and we're standing down here at the sluice bridge when the car went under. Mm-hmm. We were down there, and we were standing there at the big T. The water was over the road, and we saw his car float up down under the sluice bridge. Where it come from or where it went to, I still don't know. And the fireman started hollering for rope. So the sheriff and I decided we'll just go get some rope somewhere. And like he said, we went and got somebody that worked at Atkins's, and they let us in, and they gave us two spools of rope. And after we got it, we went down to the fire department, and they didn't want all the rope in. So we gave one to either the fire department or the ambulance people, and we kept one. Why we kept it, I don't know.
And then we received a call of some people having problems in St. George. Marguerite Halfton called us. They got it by radio that the people living on down below them, there's a little stream that comes down off the side of the mountain. She was afraid it was going to come right through their house. And we went to St. George to see, well, you know, just what the situation was. And we got to St. George, there was water across the road there at the St. George Bridge.
And we went across the bridge fine and down the ramp. And it's... You know, the water was deep, but it wasn't completely over the tars, I don't think. Yet. We went down to the lady's house that called, and the people had already got out. So we decided we better get back to Parsons, since that's where most of the population was, that we figured we'd need the help.
See, we had done cross the bridge once and was returning. And we looked at the water, didn't look like it was any higher than the first time we went through. And we got about halfway through there, and just a wave of water come and just... I guess the water just come up right now, or something broke loose or whatever, you know, and just washed us off that approach.
I think I said something like, here we go, Sheriff, or something like that. And it hit us, and then we spun. And then, like the sheriff said, we started going, and it started to tilt. It started to tilt back towards my side. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, you know, what do we do if it tilts? What do we do if it tilts?
When a vehicle washed off, it settled down on, you know, like the vehicle was gone, and it started to turn, and then looked like it was going to tilt over or whatever, and it settled on something. To this day, I don't know what it was, but the vehicle hung up on something and stayed there for a few minutes, you know, till we had time to get out of there.
We climbed out on top, and the siren went off. Scared me half to death. That siren went off. So I don't know why we didn't think of the rope at first. We didn't. And we were just sitting up there, you know, trying to figure out what to do. And from looking at the currents, you know, thinking maybe the current would carry us to the bank, but the current was going towards the center. So, you know, that was a bad idea. And then we remembered the rope, and the sheriff got back in and got the rope. And he handed me the rope, and it was still on the spool. And we tied one end of the light bar, and then I threw the rope on the spool to the boy on the bank. And him and his wife, and thank God they were there, because if not, we'd have been gone.
They yelled over at Sarah, said, "Here, catch this rope," and tied around the fence post or something with it. We could only see one fence post there, and you could take it and wiggle it all over the place. So it was me and Connie Jones and my wife. I think her mom was, my wife's mom was there too. She came over. And they throwed us a rope. We wrapped it around a post, and we wrapped it around all of our waist so they could come across.
I was scared. I think we both were a little scared, but I think that's why we were laughing after we got in the house. We were so scared. We went in there, those people treated us real good. Some chili, gave us some chili to eat. They were good to us.
Well, 2 o'clock, you know, finally the deputy sheriff and a game warden, Rocky Spencer, come around by Aurora and down that location and picked us up. And we finally got back around through Thomas and Davis and got back down to Hamilton Hendricks. And, you know, there wasn't much could be done then. It was already done.
I know Mom, she was there when we pulled the sheriff out. I never thought of it until just now, though. What if that thing would took off down the river? It took us on with it.
Yeah, that's true.
I just thought of that. Well, that vehicle would took off, it took us with it. Because we had that rope around our waist and then tied to that fence post. And that fence post wouldn't have held it.
When we went back down, I think Joe Amos and Trina's dad was, I think they was getting ready to go in there and get the Mr. and Mrs. Slipskin out their house whenever we went back down. I think they had a V-bottom boat and 2 broomsticks for paddles.
They didn't have no boat oars, so they rounded up some old brooms. I thought they were crazy going out there in that water with brooms. They knew them people were down there and they needed to come out because their house was there on the main stretch of the river. So they went out and down by Pipers and up the road. And they was going a good long time. They couldn't get them people didn't want to leave. Them Lipscombs, they didn't want to leave. They thought they'd be okay. They was upstairs in the attic.
Well, about 5 o'clock, the boys came over and wanted us to leave with them. And he said, no, it wasn't going to be that bad. Well, all of a sudden, the dog, Goldie, began to bark. And I said, something's the matter with Goldie. You better go see. Here she was, perched up on the wood, the water crept around her neck. He waded out waist deep in the water and loosened her and led her to the house. She came in to the back door, shake the water all over everywhere. The water was coming in the back door then. And he shut the door. And then we were walking around there, we turned on the lights, and the cat was looking down in one corner, just looking at something, and here the water was coming up through the crack of the wall, the floor, and the cat was watching it come across the floor at him. And the finally guy picked him up, sent him upstairs, and took Tinker upstairs, and tried to coax Goldie to come off the davenport to get upstairs, and he had to go get her and pull her off, to get her up there. And we all stood up there at the head of the steps watching the water come up, step by step. But I could see that we were going to have to, they were going to have to come after us in the boat because the water got up to the top of the step and the top of the door and it was too deep to try to get out of the house then.
It come in the first floor and I told my wife, I said, I don't think we have to worry too much. I said, it's going to cause us here to get new rugs and new carpet and stuff like that. First thing I know, it was up the steps, and we were up in the stairs, and here it came upstairs.
And we just stretched out on the bed up there, and the lights had gone out. And I had a flashlight, and he had a flashlight. And I guess both dogs and cat were on the bed beside of me, and he'd taken off his shoes. And I had my boots on, but I raised up, put my feet down, and the water was up to almost my knees. And I said, hey, we got to get upstairs. So we ushered all the animals up to the attic, and he threw up some bedding, and we were just ready to stretch out there on the floor and wait till morning.
And I heard somebody a-hollering, and we had the flashlights, and I come down and I stuck it through the window, and they were back over there. They come over and got us a boat.
And they're standing there trying to get him out upstairs his windows, and here come a trailer down the river, floating straight at us. And I yelled, Joe, to get inside the house. He yelled, no. So I kicked the window out of the top of the house. And I went inside the house. He stayed outside in the boat. And meanwhile, I lost the brooms we had.
And that third trailer from up here was a classroom at the school, hit the corner of my house. If it had been over a little bit, it had just jammed right in where we were at. But it hit the corner of the house, and I felt it give. I noted it knocked it loose from the foundation.
He comes to the window, raised the window, and I said, I said, you want to go right now, or do you want to wait a while longer? He said, no. He said, I want to go right now. He was hunting for a dog. He wouldn't go without that dog. We had him and Bo try to give him the boat, and he wouldn't give without her, so that's when I went inside. And she was up in the attic, and well, I just going to manhandle if I had to get her out there. But finally, she did go with the dog. So I went up top of the attic and kicked a couple cabinets apart and took a couple boards off of them and used them for power to come back.
So we finally begin to get in the boat, and Thelma, she says, I can't swim. The fella in the boat says, come on, I can't either.
And we got them out, and well, we only went about 100 yards, and the house took off then. We looked back, the house was going and starting to get down the river. We went down about 200 yards and got wedged, stopped.
The Lord was really with us all the way, because everyone says, how could you get out in that boat? I said, I don't know. I just leaned on the Lord and said, let's go. I just praised the Lord when we hit the land over there behind the store.
We went up to the Church of God. We was in the Church of God over there. It's up on the bank. And about 5:30 that morning, I went a-walking around here, and I seen my house was gone. So I'm past 74. My next birthday will be 75, and my ambition is just gone. Don't take much to tar me out anymore. And yeah, I cried because everything we had was gone, except a little bit of money in the bank, and that bank was even flooded out.
I think Lord had his hands on us, everybody, because of the time of day it happened. If it had happened in the night, there would have been some drownings, without doubt.
Well, about 3:30, my nephew Joey called and told me the water was running over the road, that the bus couldn't get down that way. And so I called my daughter-in-law to go around, go up to Jennington, and get Tom and her kids, the 5 grandchildren. So after she left, I thought I'd better go out and turn the cows out of the meadow because the water was getting deep. And I turned the cows out of the meadow. And Raymond was down the road at that time. He was checking on the water. And I thought about going up to his house But I didn't. I thought I'd better come back to the house because Tom and them would be coming back and they'd be wondering where I was at. And I just wondered whether I could get back to the house if I went up there.
I'd stayed at school all day and the bus drained all day. And the bus driver came in and told me, he said that part of his route was done washed out. And he'd told me about a bridge at Lanesville being washed out. And so we left there. And I kept going pretty good. And of course, your runs, like Blackwater was on the road. And you kept doing all you could because, you know, time was all you had, you know. And all the runs was across the road. And I know the last water I come through up Red Creek, why, my heaters and lights started going off. The breakers was it was waterlogged till it was a kick in my main breaker, you know what I mean, out front, the one that controlled the system. So I cut everything off on it, you know, all but just the motor. That's all I had left. And it wasn't getting too much, you know, because it was so wet. And whenever I come to Jennickston, I come around that bottom there, well, I thought maybe we was, you know, completely cut off from home. I knew if I could make the bridge, why, well, I could get home, you know. And I had 7 kids yet to get home. And I was kind of shocked when I come in and seen the Johnson Bottom covered. That's when you come down Big Run there and look across the dry fork and go up around. And I got to the bridge. It was right up close to the bottom of the bridge, you know. So I dropped it back in low gear because it didn't have much power and I didn't want it to die on the bridge. I dropped back in low gear and give it what it had, you know. And I made it across there, and my daughter-in-law was waiting on the other side up against the hill there. And I had 2 kids for up in the middle of Jennickston, the road's growing. And so I told her to follow me. Because I didn't know whether that thing was a go-run or what, you know. And I made it up to where I'd parked back some years ago. And Rose Girl's daddy was there waiting. It just pouring rain down. And I pulled it off in that parking lot, and I said, I'm going to leave it here. He said, it might not be here when you come back. And I looked at him and laughed. I said, I've weighed in, got him before here, you know. And well, he said, look up there. And we looked up the bottom, through the bottom there, and the foam was coming down there, the white foam was coming down through that bottom, I'd say 3 or 4 feet deep in. That was clearing above his house, you know. And he hollered at the girls to get to the house and get what clothes they wanted, you know, and let's get out of here. And so we jumped in the car. My daughter-in-law, she had the car turned around, and me and the 5 kids jumped in that car, and we took down through the bottom. And I think before Charlie come out, them girls' daddy, while they was wading the water was pushing them out.
Well, we got home off the school bus, and I ran to the house. And my dad told me to go get some clothes because we were going to go stay at my sister's house overnight. And then I got on the porch and looked out, and my one dog was drowning because the water was up around it. And I went out and unloosened him and took him with, put him in the car, and I ran back and got my clothes. And by the time I got all my clothes together, it was about 5 minutes, the river had raised 2 feet. And Dad made us go out and get in the car, and he came out and got in the car. And we started down the road, and the river broke through across the road and almost stalled the engine. But we made it through there, and we went down and crossed the bridge, and the river wasn't over the bridge yet. And we went on to my sister's. And we stayed there that night. And my older brother went down to look at the house about 12 o'clock, and he shined the lights on it, and the only thing you see is like from the second floor up, and the whole bottom is like a valley. The river was from each mountain. It was pretty bad, and the people lived about on the other side of the river. They lost their house, and they had cattle and a barn, and it took their whole meadow and just washed it away and washed their house. And then the people below us, Dorothy Bonner and Raymond Bonner, they lost their lives. It washed them away. They was trapped in the back of their truck, and a tree or log or something hit the truck and knocked them off. That was the bus driver's family. And now the bus is laying there totaled. The river washed the bus away.
what's there, but it's in pieces too.
We come around this mountain until we got down here. That water was already all over here. We had to wade in from over there, and we parked the car over there, and it got up in that car before they got moved out of the way, sitting over in the driveway. But it was running across this here 2 or 3 feet deep. That's how quick it got down here till we just went up around there and come down, probably. I'd say we come around maybe in 7 or 8 minutes that night. It wasn't long. Then about an hour after that, then Raymond come down over there. It was dark, you know, raining, foggy and dark. And I knowed an hour before that you couldn't get to him. Because I'd been out there, you know. And I'd looked up to his house. And his truck, you know, he used his truck all the time. He never had his car out. He had a new car. His truck was sitting right by his patio door. And I never seen nothing of him, no lights or nothing. So I figured he was over at my brother's right over in the bank at the trailer. And I come back to the house, and we'd eat a bite of supper. And I was sitting there, and my other brother come in and said, Raymond was over there. Right over there, hung up in it. And there wasn't no way to get to him. The only thing I couldn't figure out, why he stayed that long. And that up there is the highest part, so he come down here, you know, and he buried, drowned it out. But they said he'd got out and cut his fan belt, but I didn't know whether he did or not. He'd come down in this low place right over there trying to come out, you know. He's right straight across the road there. See over there where that pole broke down? Mm-hmm. Right there it was lodged. His truck lodged right against that. Now when he first come down there, he come down right over there and it washed it down over there. And then it turned it around. Now as long as they'd got out of the truck and they was in the back. And the water held them in because the truck was headed down this way, you know, down the river. The water was coming in behind, so they kept a climbing. So that fence down through there, there's woven wire fence all the way down along there. It held them there, you know. And when the fence broke, it went over there, and then the truck turned around, and then it went backwards. It kept taking them backwards, lodged against the tree down there. They were still in the back of the truck, but this way up here in the water, you know. But if they'd went back up the road, held onto that fence, they might have saved themselves, but you couldn't get over there to them, and you couldn't tell them what to do. Like Jack up there, my other brother, he tried to holler over and tell them not to go down here, but see, he couldn't hear him. You could hear them, but you couldn't talk to them, you know. You got too much noise between us. The river was roaring too much. Now, I still think he could have got out maybe himself at first, but you know, she wasn't used to water and was afraid of water, and wasn't much he could do, so he just stayed with her, probably. But I could hear him. I could sit right here and hear him holler till around 11:30. And then I'd come in the house, and they were still out there watching. Just like Raymond up there where he lived, everything he had was coming down through there. Now, he had probably 35, 40 cord of wood. It was coming down through there, you know, sticks of wood. Can you imagine crossing that much water with wood, baled hay, pieces of buildings to come? Even if you'd had a rope tied over there, you couldn't have got through because it killed you. Broke the rope, you know. There was no way. But we could still see him flash his flashlight up a tree there, but the tree was there. It was just a straight tree. There wasn't no way to, you know, to climb it. There wasn't no limbs on it. And after being in the water there probably 4 hours, they was in such a shape, you know, they couldn't hold on to nothing if it got a hold of it, like a tree or something. We'd seen the house come down and everything, you know, that bale of hay is 1,400 bale of hay just from my barn coming down. we all stayed here and watched what time we could stand to watch. We was out and in, you know, but we couldn't do nothing. My brothers was here, and one brother, and his wife, and his boys. We was all here. Yeah, they was all here. Everybody was here, but we couldn't do nothing. Of course, Norman, our other brother, and his son-in-law and his daughter was over there, but which was nothing nobody could do. And then the fire department come in toward the end. They saw him wash out. I didn't, but they had lights over there, you know, so they could see him. And then the way my one brother said that it seemed like a log or something come down. And then it shot that water up over him. That was the last time we saw him, you know. But the water hit the windshield and something, and it just went clear over the top of them. And that was about the last time that anyone ever saw.
You never thought that the water would be that high to begin with. But then after you knew they were gone, you still had this feeling that you would get up in the morning and just by some miracle they'd still be there.
I said it was really worse than war, you know what I mean? Like in war, most of the time you're separated unless you have some real close buddies that gets hit or hurt. Like, you shake it off, but, you know, to watch something like this, it's, you know, it's hard.
Next morning, it was unbelievable what was there, what it used to be. I mean, there used to be a big meadow, and now it's the river's there. The river's still under the house. We had to wade in the river just to get what stuff we could out. We've never found any, like the couches or the TV, nothing. In our building where Dad had tools and antiques, he's never found any of that. Like some, you know, it's better that it washed it all away instead of my parents trying to salvage and clean stuff up and worry about it. Because it took it all away from them. And now since they got that shock over with, they can go on. At least they don't have to worry about cleaning it up. And my sister, we had to take her, we was going to have to take her to a psychiatrist for help. Because it disturbed her. She's the same age as me, we're twins. And she always gets real nervous over things and shook up over stuff. And that night when we went to my sister, she was crying her eyes out and, I don't know, just weird stuff. And so, you know, I didn't cry because, you know, I was trying to keep her calm and telling her it'd be all right. My dad was telling her not to worry that it wouldn't get in the house. And I don't know, just something kept telling her that the house wouldn't be there when we came back, because that night when we left, she turned around and looked at the house as to say goodbye to it, because she didn't think she'd see it again. And then when she saw the house the next day, the front porch and the back porch was washed off, and it was laying. River rocks were piled up around the behind it, about 5 foot, and all the windows were broke out on the bottom. So she just kept it bottled up inside of her. She wouldn't talk about it to people or mention it the way it used to be. She liked getting out, walking outside and walking in the meadow and stuff like that. And now it's no longer there for her to do that. So she just got to the point where she was getting sick and she wouldn't eat. So finally I sat down to her and me and her just talked and she cried. She cried for about 2 hours, telling me all the stuff. We both cried because all the stuff we'd had, I don't know, we're pretty close to our parents too. They're parents, and in another way, they're best friends because they trust us a lot. So she's all right now, but it just disturbed her.
And now I'm afraid every time it rains or something,
I'm afraid it'll come another flood. And I keep getting scared. Mom keeps saying, it's going to come another flood. It's going to come another flood. Mm-hmm. And I keep saying, Mom, it's not. She says, yes, it is in March. Yes, it is. Because she read the 1986 almanac. And it said that middle of March was supposed to get another flood. But every night, since the flood, I've been dreaming these dreams that when then the flood in March comes, it's going to get up and take our house.
Well, when my friends come over, we all have a vote, and we say, what do we want to play? So I say, flooding, and they all raise their hands, and we play that, and we pretend like we're in, my dad built a playhouse for us. So we go in there and we pretend like the flood's coming. We play in school, and when they come to rescue us, they bring a big truck, and then the truck starts going down the road. And then we pretend like we're getting back to safety.
My little cousin Tiffany, now she didn't know no better, but she always wants to play flood, and I say no.
What does she mean when she wants to play flood?
Oh, she wants to fill up the swimming pool and put all of her toys in it and say that they're all gone and all that.
Mm. You don't want to play that.
Mm-mm. She didn't know what happened. She didn't understand. She's only three. And then my little cousin Sherry, one time she wanted to play flood with Tiffany, and I said, Sherry, don't. And she hit me, and she got in bad trouble.
Why didn't you want her to play?
Because Tiffany has to learn not to play that. Because it was just a big thing, and I just want to forget it. It's too bad to remember.
Just wait until the water warms up enough to where you can get in an inner tube and get your fishing pole and just start up way up the river and go all the way down the river on an inner tube or a raft or whatever you want to go in. And I'm going to go in an inner tube. I believe that would be the best way to go till you figure out how the water is and what's in the water and, you know, wear tennis shoes and everything else. This summer the rivers, probably half of them won't even be fit to be in. The places where you could swim, you know, or places I've been swimming the biggest part of my life, probably won't be able to swim there. They're probably filled up. And other places will be real deep again. There'll be swimming holes. Everything's just going to be changed. And you'll have to go get reacquainted with it. It'll be just like a new river now. I've never seen anything like that night. As far as I know, most of the people around here had never seen it. Some of the older folks had seen the flood there in 55 or 54, wasn't it? They'd seen that, but some of them I talked to said it wasn't nowhere near like this one.
I'm past 81 years old and never seen nothing like this. I don't think we ever had anything like this. This is more water than what in 1888, as far as I can tell, because there was marks on trees down the river. The marks down there on the trees where them old fellows showed me, this was way higher than the 1888 flood.
Not only was there a real tragic loss in human life and property, contemporary people, but there are archaeological sites that we'll never know anything about. And some of them are sites that we were just beginning to document and get some understanding of, and we'll never know anything about those sites ever again. One site in particular at Seneca Rocks had some artifacts made by prehistoric Indian people on the surface that we had collected previous to the flood that have been dated at 2,000 years ago or maybe even a little earlier than that, between 2,000 and 3,000 years ago. And the site from which those things were collected is now gone. Now, as an archaeologist, I look at that and what it suggests to me is that the effects of the flood were like unlike the effects of any flood in the last 2,000 or 3,000 years in that area.
Not many people in their lifetime have seen anything like this. I mean, when we went the next morning, when we went up on top of Blackman Flats and looked down from I don't know whose yard, and the whole town was underwater. You know, it's just something like the world's coming to an end.
The landslides that occurred up on the hillsides as all of this rain came down 13 and a half inches or whatever it was, ground got saturated, and the hillsides, which are really very fragile things around here, they've got a few inches to a few feet of soil overlaying the bedrock of the mountains. And when that all gets saturated, it becomes very unstable, and particularly in some kinds of soils. And so there were terrific landslides in some places, which allow us to say that's how that big pile of rocks has slid down this hillside and created this kind of thing. And it, you know, it's the principle of uniformitarianism. It allows you to see back into the past of how different landforms and features in the landscape were created.
Because they sort of happened all at once right in front of our eyes.
Yeah, because, yeah, really, that's exactly it. It happened all at once right in front of our eyes. Lots of different dramatic kinds of geological events.
And another thing, I think this is good as a help because people pitches in and helps each other. Where before, maybe they'd pass along, they didn't speak to each other. Now they speak to each other, they talk to each other and everything. I think it's something that's going to get the people closer together.
Yeah, I would say basically everybody was like helping each other out. I think this flood brought people closer together and stuff, you know. I really do. If it would get people closer together, I think it was worth it.
And it's true that the flood did bring people together. It did. It brought us closer to the people around us. And it makes you realize the things that's not important to you. Like the stuff you spend money on that you think you have to have to be in or whatever you want to, but that stuff don't really matter to a person when you almost lost your family. Being happy and just having a place to live and a roof over your head and being with the people that you love, that's the only thing that really matters. Because if you don't have that, well then materials aren't going to make up for it. It still hurts to think about it. You don't think something like that could happen. But the way the river is now, it could happen. Not very much rain again because it's all washed away. The banks are, and the trees held the soil around the banks. It's just waiting to happen again.
Now the why and the for, we never will know. That took our Green Valley away. Could it be that the Lord sent a message that night, and in it he meant for to say, the treasures man builds on the soft of the sand can be gone in the wink of an eye, and all that remains is the love of a friend to comfort and hold while you cry. Oh, we will build back just as grand as before, and in time the memory will dim. When nature has healed all the scars of the flood, Tucker's Valley will be green again.